as I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. I take a look at my life and realize.
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of Popcorn and Prosecco, 30 minutes of nonstop movie talk. Today we are covering the three new wide releases for the holiday weekend, Earth to Echo, Tammy, and Deliver Us from Evil. And I am here, I am Perry Nemiroff, and we also have Christy here, and we have Angie here as well. Say hi, Angie.
Hi.
All right, Angie got a makeover. This is Ed Douglas from ComingSoon.net, and we are so psyched to have him here. Do you want to say hi to everyone, Ed, again?
I want to say hi. I also want to apologize to Angie Han fans because I'm not as smart, funny, or cute as her. So if you come here to watch Angie Han, I really apologize. And I apologize to Angie, you know, for my impression of her earlier. Wasn't that
That's
great?
A really good way to start off the episode with lots of apologies. We should point out that Angie is actually on her honeymoon this week. So.
Yay.
It's very exciting for her.
She's eating lots of pizza, drinking wine, and I gotta say, her Instagram about the Venetian blinds made me laugh out loud. All right, so let's jump into this. I'm gonna kick things off with the movie Earth to Echo, and this is, I hate using the term found footage because it's not really accurate. Let's just call it shaky cam POV style, and it focuses on a group of three kids. I believe their names are Alex, Tuck, and Munch, and they're total outcasts, but when they find each other, they, you know, they're all happy, and it's like they're meant to be together, but nobody else likes them. But now, someone wants to build a highway straight through their town, so their parents have no choice but to split them all apart and move away, and they're all upset. But on their very last night together, it just so happens that this mysterious signal pops up on their phone, and they decide to make their last night together a big one. They're going to go investigate it. So they drive out to a desert, and they spot a little something that is really adorable that I want called Echo, and it's a robotic owl-like alien, and yeah. I mean, you guys pretty much know at this point how I feel about pet-like creatures and movies about pets, like Toothless, and oh, I just love it. I'm a sucker for it. But really, beyond just Echo being super cute, I thought this was a lot of fun. It's and E.T., the Goonies, and even like a little Stand By Me knockoff. I mean, really, it just rips stuff from all three of those movies and doesn't really give all that much to it that's original. But, you know, pulled from three great movies, and it comes together pretty well. The kids are likable enough. The story is fun enough. And, you know, I had fun with it. It's nothing outstanding, but I think if you have kids in your life and they're the target age range for this movie, even if you're older, you're going to be happy sitting through it as well. What do you think, Ed?
Well, I didn't hate it, but I was pretty bored, and I was also kind of annoyed that I had to go see it because I kind of felt like I had a chance to see it earlier in the week, and I kind of like didn't see it because I had work to do, and I said I don't really need to see this movie. And then I kind of knew we were going to talk about it. I said, oh, okay, I'll go see the movie. So I kind of went into it begrudgingly. I mean, I didn't hate it, but I mean, I would call it found footage, and I hate found footage movies in general. The Echo looks like Bubo from the Clash of the Titans, a little owl, mechanical owl from Clash of the Titans. And it's like, and that was kind of like, okay, great. I always wondered what would happen if Bubo had a bigger movie than Clash of the Titans, because he only kind of like flies in and out. So, but what happened if, and I mean, the kids were okay. It's funny. They have, there's the three guys, and I thought when I went into it that there was a girl in the movie, and she eventually.
There is a girl in the movie.
No, I know, there is, but she doesn't show up till about like a half hour in. And then when she shows up, it's like the kind of a. I don't know. Her character is okay. She kind of like took charge.
She's so kind of, underwritten. That character is like the essential love interest, and really nothing more than that.
Yeah, I kind of like she wasn't there from the beginning. She kind of comes in, and you know, one of the guys is interested in her, or vice versa. And it's like it's sort of weird because it seems like the kid Munch is much younger than the others. Maybe he's just smaller, but he seems like
I
much
think
younger.
He just has like that chubby baby face look, though.
Yeah, I guess so. But like, I really didn't. I was kind of bored. I didn't like the kids that much. But
I'm surprised you were bored because this was only 90 minutes, right?
Yeah, I know. But I get bored. Especially because you said it's like these other movies so much. So it's kind of like, you know, because I've seen these movies, and I mean, E.T. is a much better movie. And I mean, there were a couple things.
Well, three of those movies I listed are like those are some of my favorite movies of all time. So immediately when you're trying to compare yourself to that, you're gonna lose.
Yeah,
I have a question,
absolutely.
Because I didn't get a chance to see this one. What is the actual plot? Like, them meeting Echo, what is the What do they do after that?
So Echo crash lands on Earth. This is a good question, because this brings up a pretty big issue that I did have with the movie. Echo kind of crash lands on Earth, and his ship gets destroyed. I don't want to spoil any of the reveals, but what they have to do is they have to find these pieces that are hidden all around town to put his ship back together.
It sounds like a video game.
I'm sorry?
It sounds like a video game, like a mission that you're like...
A little bit. It does feel like a video game, actually. But, like, my problem with that is, first of all, what they have to do to find these pieces is the map comes up on the phone, they go to this place, and all they really have to do is get to the place. Once they get to the place, the same effect happens where, like, the room shakes, and all of a sudden Echo, like, on his own, just picks out the one piece in this place, puts it, you know, in his collection, and that's it. And... you know, it's not all that riveting. You start to catch on, and every single time they go to the place, he's going to find the piece. So that wasn't all that exciting. And then it's just the fact that that's the whole movie. That happens
found footage
over
aspect
and over and over.
Filming themselves on their
phones? That's the thing. I mean, the thing is, it's like, they have one of the kids, like, happens to be one of those kids who wants to be a filmmaker, I guess. And so he has a camera. But, like, the way they do it is, like, they almost pass the camera between them so they can make sure the other...
Everybody's actors,
everyone's on screen, because, like, otherwise you'd never see the one guy with the camera ever. And it would be like, so he has to be on camera, so they kind of pass the camera around. And it doesn't make any sense. But the thing is, what's kind of interesting about the found footage movies, and Chronicle was the same, is, like, and Paranormal Activity was as well, is how do you do these big kind of CG effects but kind of fit them into the kind of lo-fi... format. Mm-hmm. And they kind of do a lot of, and there's a couple of really kind of impressive CG scenes, although it's still very close, intimate, handheld camera type stuff. So that's in a way it's interesting, but like Perry says, it's like, they go to a place, they find the piece, there's never any tension about, oh no, they're not going to find a piece, and you always know there's going to be a happy ending in some ways.
Some of the best stuff they do, though, is when... because the large majority of this movie is about the mission. If you're a kid, you're going into this movie to see how they save this little alien. But the parts that worked even better for me is when they kind of make these kids fully fleshed out characters with very real problems. Like, at a point in the movie, they're constantly walking throughout this movie saying, we're best friends, and we're going to stand by each other's side forever and ever if we could. And then they sneak into a place... someone catches them, they all try to run away, and only one of them gets caught, and then the other two run away and leave him behind. And they get mad at each other, and that was really interesting. That moment for me worked really well. It helped me show who these characters were, what their problems were, and how much they really cared about each other. And, you know, if there was more of that, I think this movie could have gotten that extra little layer that it needed to really make an impression rather than just be like, a fleeting thrill of an adventure, and that's it, which essentially is what it is in the end.
So, Perry, I was just going to say, you guys mentioned some pretty big references, like Goonies and E.T. Does this work as a movie on its own, or is it mostly just a, like, is it tapping too much into nostalgia to work that way?
Well, I think it definitely taps into nostalgia, and I think that's mainly for the parents, because I think kids will like, kids will like the cute alien, they like the, adventure, and they like the fact that there's kids their own age. I mean, I think that's one of the things another thing that bothered me was the fact that they all had iPhones. And it's kind of like one of those things where you're going to take your kids to see this movie and they're like, oh, look, they had iPhones. Mom, get me an iPhone, too.
Well, that's kind of a thing now. I mean,
I know, but it's like this
is point. Before I had my iPhone.
I don't have an iPhone. I don't want this, like, I don't want my nephews to all have iPhones before I do. I could get one.
Oh, God, if I was growing up now and I was their age, I'd have every Apple product in the world. That's all I cared about.
Yeah, I guess so. But it just seemed like, and it seemed kind of like, it was. You know, the friendship and their things was good, but, like, you knew it was going to end with this big, like, oh, friends forever. In that way, it was also very predictable, but also I don't think it was done as well as Goonies.
That's exactly what I said, actually, when I wrote my review. Compared to Goonies and E.T., it's not as dark. It's a lot more juvenile, and it's hard to look past the fact that you're watching these kids, and there's no way in hell anything bad is happening to them. So that kind of... decreases the suspense quite a bit. And what do you think of the kids? Did you think they were good?
Well, no, that's what I was saying. I was kind of like, I thought they were kind of just generic, everyday kids. None of them really stood out as like, oh my God, this is a breakthrough performance. Oh my God, and part of it was probably the script as well. But like, it was just that it seemed like an adult's version of what today's kids are like. And then the actors were just kind of reading the lines and acting like they should, like, in some ways. It didn't feel like they were acting like real kids in some ways, you know?
Yeah, the kids all had a stereotype. Like, the chubby one, Munch, he's kind of like, he's like the tech geek and the nerdiest one. Yeah. Then the guy who's in charge of the camera stuff, that one's Tuck. He's kind of like the leader of the group and the one that bosses them all around. And then Alex is the quiet, like, sad sap, brooding boy.
He gets a girl, of course.
Be moody, boys. Girls love it.
Isn't that a great description?
I try to be moody, and they just say I'm too depressing. So.
Like, you know, they all play into that stereotype that I just referenced a bit too much. But on the other hand, every now and then they would deliver a line where it would feel like, you know, just like the intonation wasn't right. Like they were, it felt like they were acting, but then it cut to another scene and I'm like, you know, this is some real stuff. I'm buying into it. So it was kind of like back and forth for me the entire movie, which obviously is not the greatest thing ever, but they've got potential, I think.
Yeah, I think
so would you guys recommend this weekend?
I would recommend it
for people who have kids.
Yeah, I think some people will like it more than others. I think kids in general will like it. I think parents would be like, again, because we've seen things like this
harmless.
Before. It's harmless. Oh, it's definitely harmless. It's a harmless movie, absolutely. There's nothing, I mean, besides the thing with the iPhones, they'll all want iPhones afterwards. I mean, it's otherwise, it's harmless.
The world will be better with iPhones. Apple takes over. Seriously.
I thought you were going to be like, and then at the end, Echo's an iPhone.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I could keep him forever. But seriously, every little kid that sees this movie is going to want an Echo, and I don't blame them because I kind of want an Echo.
Also Perry.
Really?
Maybe Apple will come out with an Echo.
Apple should make, or whatever app developer, should make an Echo app.
Okay.
Like, isn't that perfect? And then, you know, you're walking around with your Echo app and he repeats things. It'd be cute. Kids would love that.
If this were a big studio rather than Relativity, I'm sure they would have some kind of like app game or something like that for the movie. And unfortunately,
it'd be a smart idea.
Yeah, but Relativity doesn't do that kind of stuff really. So, yeah.
All right.
Let's move on to our next movie. We're going to talk about Melissa McCarthy's new movie Tammy, which she co-wrote with Ben Falcone, her husband, who also directed the movie. And in it, she plays Tammy. Tammy is a woman whose life is kind of falling apart. We kind of meet her on the worst day of her life. Her day starts off by getting into a car accident, then she shows up late to work, and she is promptly fired, and she throws a big fit, and then she goes home to, like, get some sympathy from her husband, and she actually has to walk part of the way because her car breaks down after this problem, and she finds that her husband is a cheat, and she's like, I'm leaving! And so she tries to kind of storm off and leave town, but she doesn't have any money, so she kind of has to agree to take her grandmother with her so that she can use her grandmother's car and her grandmother's money. Her grandmother's played by Susan Sarandon, and her grandmother is a diabetic, cursing drunk who still is very sexually active, which all these things are partial to the plot of the movie, so it's important that we throw all that in there. It's interesting. The thing is that a lot of people are telling about Tammy, which is, I actually told my mom this today because she's making plans to see it, and I was like, it's not a comedy. It is, at best, a comedic drama. It's way more dramatic than I expected it to be, and the set pieces they're featuring in the commercials, like where she robs the bank or robs the fast food joint, like, those are such small parts of the movie, and they're wacky and they're kind of funny, but I mean, I think I laughed at this movie maybe 4 times. I generally enjoyed it, but it's not what you're expecting from Melissa McCarthy. It's not Bridesmaids, it's not Identity Thief. It's trying to be something much more sincere and more profound, though I don't know that it succeeds in the latter.
I don't know. I'm a little hard-pressed to say it even tries to be that way. I think it is trying to be a comedy, and it just gets caught. I feel like he wrote in all of these dramatic beats that they thought would have fit within the comedy a little better, and they don't. Like, there's certain moments of this movie that get pretty dark and serious, and it kind of does suck the fun out of it. But one of my bigger problems was just with the character Tammy and the arc she gets. Because in the very beginning, I mean, really, she might have just been like a crazy woman that came off the street somewhere. She looks so incredibly disheveled, and she's, I mean, for lack of better terms, she's kind of stupid. She doesn't make very smart. She doesn't make very smart decisions at all. But then,
I'm not saying that critically. She's a stupid character. That's like a reoccurring thing. Like, you know, at one point, her grandmother says, like, I saw Neil Armstrong walk on the moon, and she said the bicycle guy. Like, the whole, I mean, that's kind of...
Yeah. And if you got jokes like that, you can't do what you did in the end. It's like, they make her hair all pretty, and it's like, oh, look, she's really a great catch.
Yeah, the makeover's really insulting, because here's what I thought was interesting about Tammy. Again and again in movies, we've seen guys be schlubby messes, and that's okay, and they can be dumb, and we can love them anyway. Like, think of Tommy Boy. Chris Farley is not good-looking, he is a mess of a human being, he's an idiot, but he's a good guy. He's trying to do right by his dad, and so we cling to him, and we love him, and we want him to do well. Tammy is like Tommy Boy in that respect, where it is presenting us with a character who is not good-looking, who has a train wreck of a human being, but she's good at her core, and she wants to do good by her family. So, like, we're supposed to connect to her. But the problem is that the movie kind of...
But does she really?
I think she does. I mean, she's angry with her grandmother at first, but she does, I mean, like, you know, I don't want to get into spoilers, but she does do something in the film that puts her at great risk to try to save her grandmother, and I think that that's supposed, I like Tammy, and I think she's a kind...
But that scene doesn't come up until almost, you know, a little further, I want to say, than halfway through the movie, and
the movie is problematic.
For, you know, I want to say 40 minutes of this thing, she is just purely selfish. Like, you don't see any of the good. In Tommy Boy, you get hints how
I would argue, and I think we
should
talk about this
throughout.
The first scene. There's the very first scene is that she hits a deer, and she gets out of her car, and she tries to help the deer, but she's afraid of the deer because it's a freaking deer. And she's like, do you need CPR? And she starts leaning in, and she goes, I don't want you to bite my mouth. So she just starts blowing in the deer's face a little, which is absurd, and again, stupid, but it's kind. She wants this deer to be okay, even though it completely demolished her car. And, like, I got that about Tammy, and I like that. I like that even though she's not smart, we're supposed to like her, which is not typically something that we're allowed in movies about women. If a girl is supposed to be stupid in a movie, she's also buxom and incredibly beautiful, or else why the fuck are we watching her? The exception to that, and this is one of the few I can think of, and I'm totally willing to hear about more, is Muriel's Wedding, and tellingly, Toni Collette is in this movie, in a bullshit role that there's no reason.
Oh my god, she gets, like, nothing in this.
No, she gets nothing to do, and that's why I'm saying I think
her and poor Sandra Oh.
Yeah,
there, so their names can be in the credits, and that's it.
Well, I think that Toni Collette's in this so that they can make a nod to Muriel's Wedding, but that's the thing. I feel like this movie had really good intentions and was trying to do something really different, but then because halfway through we have to have the makeover, we're like, look, Tammy's hair looks nice now, and she doesn't look like a big mess because she's wearing clothes that fit her better. Like, that's insulting because Tammy was a good person before. The makeover feels a little like we're falling into a convention that seemed like the movie was trying to defy. But my bigger problem is just that Ben Falcone and Melissa McCarthy have made a movie that might be well-intentioned, but it's not entertaining.
No, this is really boring, actually. For a movie that's this short, this felt like...
It feels like a two-hour movie.
How long is Transformers, to be honest?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. Well, first of all, I'm a huge Melissa McCarthy fan from way back, pre-Bridesmaids, and I haven't seen Tammy yet, and I kind of want to see because I'm a fan of hers, but I kind of am getting sick of her because I didn't like The Heat at all because I felt like she's just kind of doing the same shtick. And you guys liked it? Did you guys like The Heat?
I am shocked that you don't like The Heat. I love.
I liked The Heat more than I liked any of her other recent stuff.
Oh,
Identity Thief's kind of boring. I like The Heat though.
I hated The Heat so much. But the thing is, I feel like, I mean, I like her. I mean, I think what one of the things about this movie is that I think her and Ben probably would have made this as an independent film, but because she's kind of gotten famous lately, they were able to get more money and get. I mean, they probably could have made this for a lot cheaper, not done a big studio release. But probably because she's kind of famous now, they were able to get more money and get a studio behind it.
I think that's a very good point.
Yeah, and so that's kind of why I kind of am kind of...
It feels like an independent movie in that it's structurally really sloppy, and if it were an independent movie, we'd probably be much more forgiving. No, not that all independent movies are structurally sloppy, but a lot of times they're doing something risky, so you kind of forgive that the structure's not very good.
Like Alexander Payne. Like, is it like an Alexander Payne kind of movie? That's the impression I get. That's more like an Alexander Payne.
I would say it's striving for that, but I don't think it gets there. I mean, part of it is that it's really structurally...
I don't think it's trying for that. I think it's just trying to be funny and a little and still have that lasting effect in the end.
Well,
and I think that ruins all the comedy in it.
It's genuinely trying to be this relationship about this fraught mother or grandfather-daughter combination, which I don't know why it has to be grandfather-daughter or grandmother-daughter. I don't know why it's not mother-daughter. And the ages casting doesn't make any sense. Like, Allison Janney's Melissa McCarthy's mom. Like, these things are all really weird and distracting. But the bigger problem is just that, like, it feels so weirdly rushed where, like, you don't know why Tammy's mad at her grandmother, and it makes her at first seem like she's kind of mean, where she's just taking her grandma along because she needs the money, but then eventually she has this whole speech about, like, what her grandmother meant to her and why she's angry with her, and these would have been things that I would have preferred to have known earlier, because it's just, like, it feels really slapdash the way the characters are set up. And there's a lot of people in this movie that you're just like, why are you even there? Like, at one point Dan Aykroyd shows up and I'm like, wait, what's happening? And then it's like, oh, he's her dad that we never saw in the first half of the movie because his character is completely irrelevant.
I think he's reduced to, like, maybe a minute and 30 seconds of this film.
Yeah. It's really strange. It's just...
Really, the promotional campaign is what threw me off more than anything.
Because the promotional campaign
really wanted a movie
like
of her knocking off the Topper Jacks. I feel like if this entire movie was about her having to, you know, do a heist for whatever reason, and it was them planning it, and then them do it, that material in that store, and seeing her behavior doing something bad while trying to be someone good, that is what really worked for me. And that is funny stuff.
Totally. That's exactly the best scene for me is the scene that they keep playing in the trailers, which is her robbing the Topper Jacks, but it's such a small part of the actual movie. And there's, like, all these really nasty parts of the movie. Like, there's one point where... and I don't feel like this is a spoiler, so I'm just going to say it. There's one point where Susan Sarandon hooks up with a guy, and because she needs the hotel room, she locks Tammy out, so Tammy sleeps outside the door. And it's just
so mean. And then on
so
top
depressing.
Of that, when she sleeps outside, they kind of, like, verbalize what happened, too, so it hits home even more that was a really mean thing. Like, I think she turns to her grandmother, and not in a funny way, but in a really hurt way, she's like, you made me sleep outside like a dog. And, like, you did just sleep outside like a dog. That's so sad.
Yeah, and she can't even sleep in the car because they took her keys. Like, it's a cruel scene. And it's, like, in the middle of this movie, it's supposed to be like, da-da-da-da-da comedy. And you're like, no, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I think they were trying to strive for something that is funny at moments but then really touching at moments. I think Melissa McCarthy has the abilities to play those kind of parts, which I think is what this was about, being like, you know me for these big things, but look what else I can do. But it's such a poorly written script that it's just really hard to get on board with. Though I liked the final sequence, though I kind of wish it had ended about 5 minutes sooner and just been about Tammy.
It's not even just a poorly written, I want to say it's a poorly structured script more than written, because I think written would imply the dialogue is all over the place, but I also think it's really poorly directed. Perhaps this could have worked if Ben Falcone had a stronger handle on the tone of each scene, but you know... He's jumping back and forth, and to be honest, I mean, who am I to say this, I guess, but I don't think they really had a very clear, maybe they had a clear idea of what they wanted when they were first putting this thing together, but I think the studio influence might have hurt it, because it just goes to show in the promotional campaign, that's kind of selling something completely different. To me, this movie just says, all the people involved in this had a different idea for what we really wanted to achieve, and it doesn't come together much at all.
I have another question because you guys talked about Susan Sarandon, and Susan Sarandon is playing her grandmother, and Allison Janney is playing her mother. And I believe that, I mean, I don't know their ages offhand, but I think Melissa McCarthy's in her 40s. Allison
I think
Janney's
it's a 23-year difference between Susan Sarandon and Melissa McCarthy. Someone told me that.
Right. But that's okay. But she's a grandmother, so that means Allison Janney's in between. I can't even. It's hard for me to even picture that. How they try to get that convincing.
It's more distracting because Mark Duplass has a father character, and the father character is hooking up with Tammy's grandmother. So it's like those two. It's like if there wasn't that extra generation in Tammy's family, perhaps that would have matched up a little better.
Right.
But
because
you could actually see a comparison about how crazy that age range is,
it's
right there,
strange.
That is a problem.
So I'm guessing you're saying I shouldn't bother seeing this or wait till DVD or cable
I don't know that I would say, especially because it's just so all over the place. Like, if you're like a Melissa McCarthy completist, or even if you just like her, I think this is worth seeing. I don't think it's worth seeing in theaters. It's not the kind of thing where you're going to be feeling the big laughs of everyone around you or anything. Like, it's not a movie that demands to be seen this weekend. So, like, if it's on TBS, give it a shot.
Yeah, I mean, see it at home. That way you can also, like, turn your head when it gets to some of the more boring parts, because that's a big problem for me with this movie. It's really freaking boring. You know, there's scenes like the Topper Jack stuff where I think that's worth seeing.
Yeah. I mean, it has a cinema score of C-, which is really bad. It means that
people... I didn't know it had come out already.
It means that people went to see the movie expecting a comedy, like you say, and probably went out like, what happened here? This is, like, really depressing.
No, that's why I warned my mom this morning. She's actually making plans to see it this weekend, and she's like, do you think I wouldn't like it? And I said, I don't know that you wouldn't like it, but it's not a comedy. It's a drama with comedic beats. It's not a very good drama. It's a shame. I think this one can be put squarely on Ben Falcone and Melissa McCarthy. It's just not a strong film.
All right. On to the last one of the week. Ed, you want to take it?
Oh, yeah, Deliver Us from Evil, which is the, I believe it's the fourth movie from Scott Derrickson. Is that right? Or fifth movie? I'm trying to think. I think it's the fourth.
The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
And he did
The Day the Earth Stood Still.
So I think it's his fourth movie. But Scott Derrickson is kind of become known for horror, mainly from Sinister, but also from Exorcism of Emily Rose, which came out, I think, about 7-8 years ago now.
Yeah, that's a while ago now.
Deliver Us from Evil is kind of in the vein of Exorcism of Emily Rose, because it also involves demonic possession, and I guess Sinister does kind of also involves that in some ways.
Yeah, sure.
I guess, yeah, a little bit. So it's sort of in the same vein as those movies. This one stars Eric Bana as Sergeant Ralph Sarchi, who is a real Bronx police officer who apparently had this case of demonic possession and a supernatural, which was kind of tying together a bunch of different cases he was exploring. His partner is played by Joel McHale, which is like the weirdest casting maybe of the year. Joel McHale is a Bronx police detective.
It kind of works, though.
It does kind of work. Because the thing is,
but it is jarring. We're like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Demons, cops, and he's like, hey guys.
Yeah, exactly. It's really funny. And the funny thing is, I saw a trailer and I saw his name in it, and I was like, that's really weird. And then when the first scene with them, so two of them together, I didn't even recognize Joel McHale. I was like, and then a couple of scenes later, I was like, oh wait, that's Joel McHale.
Because it's the first time I've ever seen Joel McHale not be the brooding dick.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, because he's been playing the guy who kind of shows up and is a complete asshole to everyone, like in every movie he's been in so far, almost. But anyway, the two of them find these cases. And, you know, there's a lot of really strange things, like a woman trying to kill her 2-year-old son, which is probably one of the most, when they actually show some video of it.
It's in the trailer.
Was it in the trailer? It's not to that extent, though. I mean, it's one of the most horrifying things.
Her chucking the kid is in the trailer.
Completely?
When you put it that
not
way.
Completely, but like, you still be like, whoop, and then they cut to, like, demon faces and stuff.
Yeah, okay. Well, maybe, I don't know if I've seen that trailer, but, like, I mean, when they show in the movie with the full thing, it's like, holy crap, I can't believe it, because it was, like, But anyway, so basically, they're following these cases. Yeah, they're following these cases, and then along comes Edgar Ramirez. I don't know how I have a problem with that. But he's a Jesuit priest who kind of knows a little bit about demonic possession, has had some experiences.
But he's like an eccentric Jesuit. But he's like a sexy priest. He's like, I smoke and I drink. And like, I mean, I'm Catholic, so priests smoke and drink, but he's a Jesuit. Yeah. That's not quite, apparently that's different.
There's a lot of
attention brought to what his vice is.
Yeah. That's really
and he wears a leather jacket.
Yeah, this is funny. There's a scene where he goes to a bar and he's having a drink and some woman starts hitting on him and he has a drink and then leaves and like, okay, I guess. Was that given away, but was that before they gave away he was a priest? I can't remember if that was just like a...
No, you know he's a priest.
Was that supposed to be a reveal?
Okay, yeah. But anyway, so the movie is basically, you know, it follows them on...
They reveal that like 10 minutes in, I think, right?
I guess so. Yeah, it was pretty early, I guess. But anyway, so it follows them following this case and... it ends up, it's hard to talk about this with a spoiler, but it involves a couple Marines who kind of found a cave.
I feel like we've got the base of it. It's basically a cop who is a cynic and not a religious man meets a priest who tells him the devil is real, and then it's about the case that brings the two of them together.
But you forgot the most important part of the movie. The family side of it, come on.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm just kidding. I thought that was the worst part of it.
I mean, and that makes sense, because thematically that's a lot of what Scott Derrickson does. Like, there is the element where, like, Ralph Sarchi is working so much that he's neglecting his family, and his daughter is experiencing all this weird phenomenon.
We've seen that play out time and time again. There was no need.
Wasn't that a Sinister also?
Yeah.
It was, okay, yeah.
Yeah, but like, see, in Sinister, that felt a lot different because he was doing all of that in the house, and his family was all around him all the time, and the kids were getting into his work physically versus him being in an entirely different location than all of a sudden, like, a toy.
And then Olivia Munn showing up with her terrible Bronx accent and being like, "You're never here."
That's just a really good impression.
There you go, guys. That's actually what she said. Because I was like, that sounded terrible, but it did sound like how she sounds
in this
movie.
Like her a lot.
Yeah, that's probably going to be your most esoteric impression ever, Christy, because it's like you could do your act and you're like, and then everyone would go like, "Oh, did you see Deliverance from Evil? That was Olivia Munn." And I'm like, "Oh, we didn't see that movie." So, like, but,
yeah, this is why my stand-up career is going nowhere.
Yeah, but the funny thing is I actually didn't like the family stuff so much until the horror stuff started affecting them too, and I like, and it's funny because in the trailers, some of the trailers, that's been the most effective scenes, the stuff with the kid, and so that,
the
and so
owl.
The owl,
I feel like that's why they did it though. It's like the family stuff to me felt like it came from a completely different movie. Like I think that they, I cannot speak to what they actually did, but it almost feels like they did the whole story without all that family shit, and they're like, "Shit, we need like a B storyline, so let's go into this house, shoot all this shit really quick." I mean, Erlinger said the same thing the other night. We went with a friend of mine to see this movie, and he pointed that out as well. It felt like it came from another movie. Like even the tone of those scenes felt different than all the other material.
Yeah, it's really kind of strange and jarring, and like,
what fucking kid has a Jack in the Box? Seriously, we were just talking about iPhones before. If she had an iPhone and it was rattling in the middle of the night, I would have bought it. But no, she's got an old
Jack in the Box.
That's such a weird.
That's a very James Wan type thing to do. I mean, he has a Jack in the Box. Yeah, in fact, he gets to use a Jack in the Box.
He's back in time a bit. Like, you know, The Conjuring set earlier, so you can kind of get. Yeah, it's. I thought some of the things. First off, Delivers from Evil is really gross, so cheers to that. And I say that as someone who. I just feel like I have to say this because people need to know. I watched Tammy and Deliver Us from Evil back to back because I couldn't make the press screening, so that was my Wednesday. And I didn't get to eat, and so I went and got movie theater pizza. And if you really want to fully engage with Deliver Us from Evil, I recommend getting movie theater pizza because it doesn't taste or feel like anything that food should be. And just reaching into it in the dark while gross things are happening and try to force yourself to eat that because you need sustenance.
I think the characters are literally foaming at the mouth for like 75% of this movie.
There's a pause where a corpse bursts into maggots and I'm like, pepperoni. Like.
So is that a positive review of Theater Pizza or not? I can't really figure out if that's a positive or negative review.
I mean, if there's a way to eat Theater Pizza is purely a fear factor situation where you're like, I bet I can do this because it's hideous.
I feel like I like this movie better than you two did. I mean, I actually didn't hate the movie. I thought we've seen a lot of this before, but like things like the maggots in the body, things like some of, I don't want to give away, but this. Like, someone jumps off a building, and they show a very gruesome...
I think they showed that in one of the trailers, too, actually.
Really?
I feel like they did, because I feel like I've seen it before. Here's the thing that bums me out. Because I liked the build-up. I thought it was a good story. I thought it was a good build-up. Besides the fact that the family stuff is a little distracting to the main narrative, like, I get what it's supposed to do, but it's not really jiving. I feel like the film is wildly anticlimactic. Like, when they defeat the big bad, I was like, oh, that's it? Like, I thought there was going to be another step. And that kind of bummed me out. Also, I do think the trailer gives away the best scares.
Which is probably why not seeing the trailer probably helped me with enjoying.
Actually, I'm going to say the opposite to that. I thought, because you guys know I write that best trailers of the week piece every week. So I've seen this. And also, Sinister was my third favorite movie of, 2012?
Yep. I loved Sinister. I thought Sinister was really scary.
I was kind of obsessed
with
it.
This isn't written.
I watched it a lot.
You need to point that out.
I walked into this with kind of sky-high expectations, and I was so excited. And it's different. It's not horror. It's more like, I mean, saying it's an exorcism movie implies horror, but it's got a more religious quality, and then there's the police procedural part. It doesn't play like a straight horror movie.
It's much more like.
I will say, it made me really uneasy. Even though a lot of the best shots are shown in the trailer, this is the first time in a while that I'm watching something, and like, you know, it was creeping me out a little bit. But that mostly came down to the fact that the visuals were creepy, and that once you get a taste of what happens in this movie, knowing that more is coming makes you uneasy. But, you know, like Christy said, the big build was not there at all. And a big problem I had with the movie is that Edgar Ramirez's character seemingly could just do anything. He just says things, and we take his word for it. There's no fight. There's no figuring things out with him. He just shows up to Eric Bana with all the answers.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, I think it's very much like Exorcism of Emily Rose, because that was kind of a courtroom drama, and you know, it was kind of combined two things.
They're written by the same people. Like, this is not written by the same team that did Sinister. It's written by the same director who co-wrote all three films. But this is
It's written by the two of them. I know, but they co-wrote Exorcism of Emily Rose together.
Exactly. It's way more like that than Sinister. I just want to make that clear to our readers.
Right. But it also I think these two movies are also kind of based on some kind of actual events. I mean, you could watch this movie going, yeah, that never really happened, because it seems like there's obviously things which are like, that couldn't have happened.
There were some things I'm like, I feel like I would have read about that, because it's set in New York.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Like, that part of my brain was going off, but... I mean, I can't remember
a single summer in New York where it rained that much. It rains so much in this movie that it even rains inside during one scene.
I think it's raining that much right now in New York City, though. Yeah, we've had, hellish weather where it's, like, lightning and storms and clouds. Happy 4th of July.
It's actually kind of nice here. We might be able to salvage the day.
Oh, that's good.
So, would you... I mean, I generally like the movie. I'm kind of torn on whether I'd recommend it, though, because I think the ending is pretty weak.
It's hard for me to
recommend, too, because I'd say I'd recommend it if you liked, you know, The Sinister or The Exorcism of Emily Rose, but this has, like, a little bit of so many different kinds of horror in it that I can't really pinpoint what will appeal to you, necessarily, but I think it's a well-done movie. It makes me uneasy. It made me, like, a little scared. And I was never bored. I enjoyed watching it. It's just, you know, the fun of it is figuring out this mystery and how to fix this issue. And
I also want to point out something
that comes together doesn't really work very well.
There's also a hint in the movie that by watching the movie, you're going to anger Satan. There's like an implication of that. And something funny and creepy that happened on the way home, me and Glenn Dunks, who's another writer that saw the movie with us, we were talking... there was, like, a man very loudly playing, electric guitar on the subway system, so we had, like, worked our way far away from him, and we were talking about Robin Thicke and how he's annoying, and the guy started playing Blurred Lines, and I was like, You don't think he heard you?
Like, oh, he must have really good ears.
We were discussing that, because, I mean, I don't know if you, like, I know Perry's met, you both met Glenn. He can be loud. He knows that. Do you think he heard you, or do you think we're cursed? And we're not totally sure.
Because you think the Satan and Robin Thicke are in cahoots? Is that what you're thinking?
And then I have a Twitter follower that's called, like, hashtag get possessed. And he's like, oh, well, did you tell anyone you were seeing this movie? And I was like, no, I did not tell social media I was seeing this movie. This is just a weird coincidence.
Christy, I disagree with you about the ending being anticlimactic, because I actually thought the ending was great. I actually liked the movie more as it got to, like, I mean, once it got to the point, like, when, like, the owl scene and afterwards, and when the kind of the bad guys kind of got, kind of like started showing up at Ralph Sacchi's house. I mean, that started getting really intriguing to me. It got more interesting to me. Like, there were more stakes involved than just trying to solve this case. And I thought
it's the final 10 minutes that I'm just kind of like, oh, that's how we're ending it. It just didn't feel like the big battle I thought we were gonna get.
It's because
no one knows how to use guns in this movie. Like, they have guns, but they keep getting a gun and then getting really close to somebody. And I was like, that makes guns less effective because they can be knocked out of your hand. Like, what are we doing?
Didn't you like the knife fight?
Yeah.
The knife fight, but I don't understand why it happened.
Well, this is New York City, and police officers are very skittish.
You are a police officer.
Police officers are very skittish about using guns these days. I don't know if you know, but there's a lot of shootings of people, like, you know, by police officers. I think police officers in general are a little bit skittish about using their guns if they don't have to, you know. So they have some knives. They'll use those instead, because then they can't get accused of
shooting. Yeah, that's a way better Gothamist headline.
Exactly,
repeatedly stabs crazy person in stairwell.
Yeah,
way that was better.
Because at least the other guy would have a knife, so he could at least say, hey, I have a knife.
I think we need to wrap this up. I
feel like we just gave everybody the most confusing, like, consensus ever.
I'd say
if you like the horror genre, go see this, because this is a well-made movie, well-directed movie, freaking beautiful movie, too. I will put that out there.
That gore looked awesome.
Watch the movie, not the trailers.
I would say, yeah, don't watch the trailers, but I would say if you're not a huge horror fan, you'd probably be very scared by this. But I think it was very effective, and I think, you know, I mean, I think if you're a horror fan, there are some scenes, some really kind of gory scenes in there you might enjoy. But I think for non-horror fans, it'd probably be more interesting because it's kind of, you know, it's kind of an interesting case, and, you know, watching them follow the clues, and you'll probably be more scared than...
I admire the way he attempts to play with the genre and make it a crime drama thing, too. I just didn't think it worked as well as I would have liked.
Mm-hmm. Right. I will agree with that. All right, so that is it for this week. I feel like we're all over the place now, so now I'm afraid I'm going to miss all of our, like, social media and all this great stuff.
But yeah,
For the newest thing, go subscribe to us on iTunes, because that's huge. We're really excited about it. There's the video podcast and an audio version, so if you want to take us with you now, you can. And it is a huge help to leave reviews and rate our episodes. So if you would go do that, we'd really appreciate it. And then all the usual places. Obviously, we are on YouTube, Popcorn Prosecco, Twitter, Popcorn Prosecco, popcornprosecco.com, and then, of course, we are all over the internet, too. Ed, I will give you the first go at this. Can you tell everyone where they can find your writing?
Sure. By the way, if this is the lowest rated episode, they'll definitely bring Angie Hahn back. I'm pretty sure she's coming back next week anyway, so never fear. But yeah, I'm at whatever that A thing is, EDouglasWW on Twitter. I write for ComingSoon.net and Superhero Hype and Shock Till You Drop from time to time.
Christy?
I'm at Christy Puchko on Twitter, and I can be found all over the web, but you can follow me on my personal blog, DecadentCriminals.com, for highlights.
And you can catch me on Twitter. My handle is PNemiroff, and my writing is all over the place, but you can find it in one nice, neat little spot, littlemisscritical.com. Thank you guys so much for watching. Thank you, Ed, for joining us.
Oh,
we are very much looking forward to getting Angie back, but I've got to say, no matter how much you put yourself down, you're a pretty solid replacement.
And you're our first full guest host.
Oh, yeah. I know. I'm so flattered. I'm really flattered about that. So, and I'll leave nice comments this time saying, oh, that guy is great. I won't do that at all.
He's your name, Weekend Warrior.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you guys so much for watching. We
have a great
next week.